The Blitz. KFNC Mont Bellevue, Houston. A Gau Media station. If you're not down with that, we got two words for you.
Are you ready? Hey, think you can tell us what to do? You think you can tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters. Break it down.
This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
All right, hour two on The Blitz. Patrick Creighton in for Fred and A.J. Aaron on the other side of the glass, the master controls. And we're going to get into the Astros in a minute. But first, we've got ourselves a Woj bomb. The New Orleans Pelicans will trade the number four pick. And according to Adrian Wojnarowski, they have sent it to the Atlanta Hawks. They send the number four pick, Solomon Hill. That's almost $13 million in salary. The number 57 pick and a future second to Atlanta for the 8, the 17, and the 35. That's a nice value deal for the Pellies, who need lots of young talent. Somehow in all this, Atlanta sends the Cavaliers like a super heavily protected first-round pick in 2020. Oh, no, excuse me. I read that wrong. There's another first-round pick. It's originally went from Cleveland to Atlanta. It's heavily protected. It's a first-rounder in 2020 that Atlanta is also sending to the Pellies. So they get two firsts, an early second, and they get another first next year. And the report from Woj is that Atlanta is hot for DeAndre Hunter of Virginia with the four. So, you know, last year they made the move to get Trae Young. This year, DeAndre Hunter, Atlanta making some moves. And David Griffin gets more value out of that deal. I'll tell you, the Lakers look more and more like a bunch of boobs. How do they not know about, you know, the cap and the date? Isn't it weird that, you know, you and me basically know more about the NBA salary cap than Rob Pelinka? I mean, you didn't even have to work in an NBA front office to know if the date wasn't July 30th, they were going to lose $9 million because damn near everyone told you. I mean, you have to live in a bubble to not know this. Aaron, you're like counting up draft picks over there, brother.
So if I count this correctly, New Orleans sent Anthony Davis to the Lakers for a total of 9 players. Follow me on this. You get rid of Anthony Davis, so I guess it'd be 8 net. You get rid of Anthony Davis. You pick up Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart. Then you get 3 first-round picks.
Boom, boom, boom.
The fourth pick. Then you turn around and turn that fourth pick into 3 more picks.
Boom, boom, boom. That is 8, brother. You are on the money. They turned Anthony Davis into 8 players.
That's like that show that used to be popular in the late 2000s where you would start with a paperclip and trade all the way up to like an RV within like 15 trades and whoever
yes,
could do it win a couple
million
dollars.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. My little brother used to do that with cars.
Here, I got this 73 Pinto with a giant dent in the back. Let me trade it for your 68 Eldorado.
And Anthony Davis is worth 8 players.
8 players. No, 9 players because they got that pick in 2020 as well.
That okay, 9 players.
9 players.
Name me one player in the entire NBA that's worth 9 players, realistically. You trade 9 players for KD? A healthy KD?
Maybe. KD with both Achilles, maybe? You trade 9 players for Kawhi Leonard right now?
Maybe.
Maybe. There's no maybe. You know, Anthony Davis has won one playoff series his entire career. We got nine players out of it. Dude, I don't think that the Pelicans are going to be a good team, but they're not going to suck. Somebody asked me on the text line, can the Rockets trade Capella and Paul for Lonzo and a later first round pick? The answer to that is no, because it's $53 million going out and, what, $8 million coming in. New Orleans couldn't even absorb that much cap space. Before the deal, they had $34 million, so that'll bring them to $46 million in cap space. All right, I guess theoretically they could, but they'd have no money at all. And they have to sign their draft picks. So, yeah, no, that is not a deal that's going to work. Not for Paul. And as much as I think Lonzo is a very talented player, he might have an ugly-looking jump shot, but he's gotten progressively better each year in the league. I have concerns about, look, he's 21 and he can't stay on the court. You know, people question, well, Chris Paul is 34. Can he stay on the court? Well, if Lonzo's 21 and he can't stay on the court now, isn't that like huge red flag? I don't think Lonzo's ever going to be a 20-point scorer, but I think he could be a 10 to 12-point a game guy, but has great court vision, rebounds well. He is a terrific defender. He's a big guard. Great defender. And, you know, if you really want to look at it in this way, if the Rockets are going to run their offense with a guy like Harden basically running the offense as the de facto point guard, a guy like Lonzo would be great if he could be consistent knocking down threes. You know, you remember that's how... You know, that's how, you know, the Bulls used to be. What was Derek Harper's job? What was Ron Harper's job? Ron Harper's job was play defense and knock down open threes. Could you get that from Lonzo? I don't know if he can consistently knock down an open three. You know, the guy they had who developed a three-point shot and became a 40% three-point shooter and played great D, that was Pat Beverly. They had that guy. I mean, look, I understand you had to give him up for Chris Paul, but they had that guy. And PBev's probably going to get more money on a market than the Rockets have to give. But that's, you know, that's the kind of, have a guy out there who can knock down threes and play badass D. That's it, right? That's your off guard if Harden's always going to control the basketball. So Woj bomb, deal's getting done. I'm excited for the draft just because I feel like we've already seen three big deals go down, and I feel like there's going to be more deals. That'll not be the last. I think we're going to get more deals, and that's what makes the draft exciting to me, is everything that gets done on the fly. I wanted to get into the Astros. We're going to have to table that for a little bit as far as the discussion on the Astros. But we're going to be talking to Rich Justice from MLB.com, and we will definitely get some of that Astros in when we talk with Richard, who's going to be coming up here, coming up next. Now, before we hit the break, let me tell you about the James Harden Pro Camp. James Harden wants to play basketball with your kids. Attend the James Harden Basketball Pro Camp in partnership with Kroger, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Kids in grades 1 through 12 can join James July 20th and 21st at the MI3 Center. Head to ESPN975.com and you can register to win a spot for one lucky kid to join James Harden and his Houston area coaches for a small group instruction on basketball fundamentals and fun. It's a James Harden Pro Camp. Talking to Richard Justice, MLB.com, next.
This
is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Patrick Creighton and Fred and A.J. on The Blitz. Joining us right now on the HRMP hotline from MLB.com, it's our friend Richard Justice. Hey, Richard, how you doing?
Hey there. How's it going?
Doing all right. You know, the Astros were playing so well in spite of the fact they were down so many guys, and they ran into a little rough patch here in Cincinnati, but looks like they're going to get some reinforcements on the way soon.
Yeah, I think the bigger question for me is which Jose Altuve will we get? Will he be comfortable enough with that right leg to look like himself? And he hasn't the whole year. You know, you worried about this surgery from the beginning because it was not dissimilar from what Dustin Pedroia had, and it can be a long, slow recovery period, but he says he feels good. It's not the running the bases. I know he's looked awkward running the bases. It's the plant leg on the at-bats, and I think Springer will play Tuesday against the Pirates, and so they'll sort of be close to whole from there, and it's just a matter of going out and playing. This weekend, a good test against the Yankees. Just to see, kind of get a check of where they're at, because the Yankees are getting their guys back and they're playing really well.
Yeah, that's kind of the other team, Richard, that's dealt with a ton of injuries.
Yeah.
But they just continue to win. And I thought their move for Edwin Encarnacion was a great move. One, and that lineup is so loaded with power when they're healthy. And two, you know, the Astros' production at first base has been pretty lousy. It's been a black hole. And, you know,
right.
He was a guy I thought they might look at in the offseason. They didn't. A guy that maybe they'd look at a trade market during the season. They didn't. The Yankees get him. Is that the kind of guy that maybe the Astros should have been looking at?
No, they did look at him, and they did. They were in on him this time. And
they were in on him.
Yeah, they were in on Encarnacion. I think, in defense of Gurriel, and there's not much defending because their first base production has been terrible, his hard hit rate is pretty good, and so you tend to think that kind of stuff evens out. But is it what you want? No. Ultimately, their priority is going to be to go get pitching. Jeff Luno's baseball staff gave him 30 names on Monday, and I think almost all of them were pitchers, and he's starting to explore, like, are you ready to trade now? I think the Astros are going to be a real late trader just to figure out what's going on with Miley and Peacock and Valdez and the back of the bullpen. You know, bullpens come and go fast in this sport. So I think ultimately they're going to go out and get pitching and just make do with what they have at first base.
Now, Richard, you know, Joe Smith, who's been out for, you know, from the whole season, he's a guy who in his career has been a really good reliever. And, you know, he's working his way back. He's making some rehab appearances and whatnot. And, you know, if he can pitch like he has in his career, that's certainly a help to the bullpen. How much concern is there right now about the closer who hasn't been good for a few weeks?
Yeah, there's always concern. The Astros will tell you that that relievers are volatile stocks. And that's why they've been very hesitant to commit long-term dollars to guys. Now, you know, on the other hand, Will Harris has pitched better than they probably thought. So I think they still feel, you know, if you could get Osuna, Presley, Rondon, Joe Smith, Will Harris lined up, you'll have a pretty deep bullpen, a pretty competitive bullpen. And then it comes down, you know, it's still going to come down to how you look at yourself on September 15th or September 20th. How's Verlander pitching? How's Cole pitching? It's a game of streaks and balances, of checks and balances, and how you're going. Sparky Anderson always said, "Don't tell me who's the best team on October 1. Tell me who's the healthiest team and what team's got the best vibe." In that way, I trust AJ Hinch to get to do a great check of the environment and see where they're at. I think the bigger disappointment is they thought Corbin Martin and Forrest Whitley would probably have contributed a little bit more by now, and they don't even know where Whitley is hopefully on the road back. But ultimately, one of the things they've shown the last month is they have the depth to go out and get a guy, you know, if it's Marcus Stroman, somebody like that, that could really make a difference in the rotation. That at the end of the day is probably going to be where they try to shore up.
Now, Rich, guys who are you know, rumored to be available, Marcus Stroman, Madison Bumgarner,
yeah.
Noah Syndergaard's name had popped up, but now he's on the injured list, although Zach Wheeler's name is popping up. Any other guys on that list that you think the Astros might be interested in?
Yeah, Matthew Boyd of the Tigers, I think, is a guy. In terms of the Astros go for velocity and spin rate. They like power guys in this era of home runs and fly balls. And I think Stroman just kind of jumps off the charts at you with what he brings to the table. I think Bumgarner is the biggest name, obviously, but less so. The most intriguing name would be Greinke if the Diamondbacks. You got a lot of things, a lot of moving parts there with $105 million left on his contract. The problem and some no trade protection that makes him more problematic. But if I had to take one name, I would run with Marcus Stroman right now, which probably means it won't happen. And you know, you could get to July 31st, and Whitley, Martin, Wade Miley, and Peacock are all pitching well. The thing is, you don't get a second. You don't get a do-over like they did with 17 with Verlander. You have to make a call, and my call is that the one of the things that Jeff Luhnow has learned on the job, I think, as general manager, is that sometimes you make a trade for the sake of making a trade, in that there's an emotional impact it has in the room when you bring in a big-time guy. So I think he definitely wants – he's got a team that's going to win the division and it's going to play in October. But you want to – this window is open for an extraordinarily long period of time. You want to give them every chance to take advantage of it.
Richard Justice, MLB.com, with us on the HRMP guest line. Richard, you know, we were talking about the bullpen early and Roberto Osuna and, you know, some of the struggles that he's had. And you mentioned, you know, their philosophy is, like, relievers go through peaks and valleys. We're going to be patient with it. But Ryan Pressly is just filthy. I mean, he's got the nastiest breaking ball in the league, almost 11-inch break. I mean, it's unreal that you can make a ball move like that. He's basically unhittable. And even though Osuna's numbers on the season overall, his numbers aren't bad, if he struggles for another week, they start to give Pressly a few extra opportunities? And is there a chance he could actually wrest the job from him?
Well, if's a big word. Yeah, of course. I mean, if, yes, that would be true. The one thing about that is, A.J. Hinch, I've been doing this a long time. He has as good a feel for moves like that as anybody I've ever been around, like moving Springer to the top of the order, like moving Bregman from sixth to second when he was at the lowest point in his career, like moving Altuve to second and then to third. So you make a move like that, you got to make sure everybody's okay with it. Last year, I think it was in the postseason, he flipped Springer and Altuve, and the conversation was 5 seconds. He went to them and just like make a flipping motion, and they were like, yeah, okay, whatever. It's not always like that in a move like this, so we'll see what he decides. Osuna's stuff is still so good. I think he's just going through one of those stretches, you know, that guys go through from time to time, because he went through the opposite kind of stretch before that. Just he was perfect, and every ball that was hit hard was getting caught, and he's not having that now.
In other words, you've covered the Astros for a really long time. You've seen a lot of different teams go through that clubhouse. There is a perception that when this team is healthy, and you know you've got, you know, Altuve and Springer and these guys in the clubhouse, they have fun and they seem to be, you know, more down to earth guys, a little more of a close knit group. Is that something that you see as a difference? Like, is this team just a little more blue collar, as you know, more down to earth, seems to just get along really well, more than other teams you've seen in the past?
That's the question I get asked more than any other. Are they really like that? Do they really have that much fun? You know, and sometimes even older fans like would not be inclined to like showboating when it's Springer or it's Correa or it's Bregman. It's just who they are. And I tell them, they are really like that. Now, to me, it starts with Springer. But Springer sets a whole tone for the whole organization in the way he goes about his business, the way he shows up every day. He's the DJ for the parties after games. He was paid the ultimate compliment that when he was on the disabled list a couple of years ago, AJ asked him to put on the uniform and stay in the dugout and yell at me, yell at your teammates, yell at your umpire, yell at the umpires, do whatever you have to do. The only other player I knew that got that kind of respect was Scott Rowland when he was hurt 1 year with the Cardinals. They said, we need you around for who you are. And I think that's it. And I think, you know, and Bregman has morphed into that. Correa's like that. And also Verlander, you know, Verlander's one of those guys that cares so much and has plays with such pitches with such fire that it brings out the best in everyone around them. And the same is true of Gerrit Cole. You know what's the neat part of that is how they're trying to indoctrinate Wade Miley into that, and how, in a weird way, Dallas Keuchel is still part of that family. They're imparting on Miley, you know, well, this is the way Dallas handled that. You know, and you wouldn't think power guys and a finesse guy like Dallas would be able to feed off each other, but they do. They feed off each other and learn from each other. I've never been around a better team environment. Now, I'll say this, in 04 and 05, you know, they had it going because they had good guys there, too. And you had, and that on those teams, you had Kent, at least in 04, you had Kent, Pettit, and Clemens, who just, their goal wasn't to get to the postseason. They didn't care about that. The goal was, when we get there, we're going to win, and whatever we have to do to win, we're going to win. And I think that attitude rubs off on other people too. Bagwell once told me at Clemens, like, you're going to bring, he brings out the best in you because you don't want to look over and he's staring at you.
Richard Justice, MLB.com, with us on the HRMP listening line. Richard, does Jordan Alvarez have to play first base?
He can't. I mean, I would say yes, but he can't. And, I mean, that's the analysis of the organization, that he really has. It's going to be a challenge for him to play left field. He's a DH, and I know scouts say he's going to play first base ultimately. Maybe they can, that he can have, like, he can go to the Ron Washington Graduate School of Infield coaching, a tutoring over the offseason or something. But right now, they just, you know, first base is that position that you don't, it's like long snapper, you don't really appreciate it until it goes haywire, and then it costs you a couple of games. You know, a good first baseman saves errors all over the field. That was one of the part of Bagwell's game that we probably didn't appreciate enough at the time, is how great it was, like having a shortstop playing first base. So I don't see it happening for now. You know, Tyler White's had a good 2 or 3 weeks at the plate, but I don't even know if he's going to survive this roster purge that's coming up.
And I don't think Tyler White's all that slick in the field either.
No, but, you know, it's his position. He's played there. He knows the nuances of it, as does Gurriel, who's been pretty remarkable over there, considering he played his whole life at third base. You know, I think on that, you just have to trust them. They got a good track record, and they're just not going to be comfortable penciling him in there. Now you watch. I say that, and he'll play first base tomorrow night.
So do you think the plan is basically they're going to ride it out with Yuli for at least for the rest of this year?
Well, Josh Reddick has taken some balls there. I mean, it may get to the point where we have to have a tough conversation. I don't think Michael Brantley's going to play there. And I don't think they're not at all comfortable having a full-time DH, because with Brantley, given his history, you need to get him off his feet as much as you can. And, you know, they like what teams do now. They like to use the DH spot to give guys a break. And when you have guys that have been injured, like Springer and Altuve and Correa, you want to give them as much of a breather as you can. For all the depth in the organization, it's funny that there's not a first baseman. That there's, you know, it's a really deep organization, but there's not anybody that tempts them there right now.
Richard Justice, MLB.com, with us on the HRMP listener line. You can get him at Richard Justice on Twitter. Richard, always appreciate your time. Always great info. We'll talk soon, my friend.
Thank you for having me, guys.
All right, Richard Justice, MLB.com, with us on the HRMP guest line. On a blitz.
new restaurant to go to? Visit culturemap.com to get the latest restaurant and bar news.
I hope you're hungry.
From Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Patrick Creighton and Fred and A.J. on The Blitz. And not only can you get us over there, you can get us on the ESPN 97.5 app. You can get us on the Twin Peaks Twitch live stream. Lots of ways to get us, although I do have to warn you on the Twitch live stream. I'm probably just as ugly as Fred. So, like, you're not getting anything better out of that than what you normally get. Handsome AJ is not here. Aaron's on there. See, there's somebody good looking on there. Aaron's on there.
That's the only person in this whole station who's ever going to say that about me, so thank you.
Well, that's because the other two are lying sacks, but, you know.
Well, yeah.
All right, so big ups to NBA.com for not updating their draft order. They still have the Lakers at 4. Now, they gave up the pick, you know, a week ago, and then the Pellies traded it to Atlanta, and they still have the Lakers at 4. So big ups, NBA.com. And even after all of that, we talked to that before we talked to Richard Justice with MLB.com getting to the Astros. We talked to you about the deal the Pellies made, sending the 4 pick to the Hawks. Well, there has been another trade. The Phoenix Suns will send the number 6 pick to the Minnesota Timberwolves in exchange for the 11 pick and Dario Saric. Now, Saric isn't a star. He's a good role player. Not a great three-point shooter, but good rebounder, can score, plays defense, can guard multiple positions. He's a useful player. So Saric and the 11 for the 6. So the T-Wolves, who've been looking to move up, couldn't move up to 4, couldn't move up to 5. Well, they get to 6. And tell you, more deals. This is the best thing about draft night, is there's just deals everywhere. And I don't think they're done yet. I don't think they're done yet. I feel pretty good that the Knicks are not going to trade away the 3 pick. Like, they're going to take RJ Barrett, and that's that. Like, they're not going to screw that up. Because if anybody could screw it up, it's the Knicks. So that is the latest from the NBA. And we were just talking with Richard, and we were talking about the production that the Astros are not getting at first base. Now, James Smith is a researcher for Yes Network, as the Yankees are welcoming in the Astros tonight. And he did some work, and the Astros are top 8 in WAR. Every position, except 2. Second base, where they're 15th, and they've had to play 35 games without Jose Altuve. And first base, where they are 25th. Where your primary culprits are Tyler White and Yuli Gurriel. Now, Tyler White has all of 2 homers in 152 at-bats. And I say that because Yordan Alvarez has 4 homers and 30 at-bats and a Ruthian 12-11 OPS. And even though that's really high, he did have a 12-05 OPS, you know, at Round Rock. So Alvarez rakes. Apparently he can't – he's useless with a glove. Might as well have, like, 3 left hands. But the dude rakes. Tyler White's hitting .237 this year with a .695 OPS. Now, generally speaking, if you've got a 750 OPS or better, you're a okay starter. If you have an 800 OPS, you're a pretty good starter. An 850 OPS, you're an all-star. 900, you're a starting all-star. You're over 900, you're a boss. Okay, guys who have high OPS on the Astros. Michael Brantley, 904. He's got 11 homers and 21 doubles. No one will be surprised. Alex Bregman, 926. He's got 20 bombs and 10 doubles. Carlos Correa, before, you know, Brienne of Tarth gave him a massage and broke his rib. 907 OPS, 11 homers, 13 doubles. George Springer, 1032 OPS, 17 homers, 9 doubles. Tyler White, 695. That is below replacement level. That is barely backup infielder, maybe on your way out of town range. And when you're Tyler White, and basically you're a butcher in the field, and you're not hitting, those numbers should mean sayonara. Now, Yuli Gurriel, who's got five homers and 270 at-bats, and, you know, when Yuli first came here, we were expecting a guy who'd hit 20 homers, and after that wrist surgery last year, he will never be that guy. But in addition to that, the other part of Yuli's game that's frustrating is he doesn't walk to save his life. He's hitting 263. It's not terrible. His on-base is 297. He's only walked 14 times all year. That's terrible. As a result, he's got a 693 OPS. Yuli is basically playing like a utility infielder. Now, by contrast, Aledmys Diaz, before he got hurt, had five homers and 98 at-bats, and he's got an 831 OPS. They'd be better off having Aledmys Diaz in the lineup every day than having Yuli Gurriel. And one of the things that we probably have to consider, you heard Richard talk about this when he was just on with us 20 minutes ago. Altuve hasn't looked right with the knee all year. He hasn't looked good running the bases. It's his plant leg when he swings, so it's uncomfortable. If Altuve has to play the DH role more often for them to work him through the season, well, Diaz has to play more second base. That means there's still a hole at first. He mentioned Josh Reddick as a potential at first base. There's some question about that, too. We'll get into it next. It's the Blitz.
The Blitz. The Blitz on ESPN.
ESPN
97.5.
Oh, 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 no, no. Ooh, oh, 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 no.
You are listening to The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Patch Creighton in for Fred and A.J. on The Blitz. Hey, don't forget to hit up the ESPN 97.5 social media accounts on Snapchat, ESPN 97.5. On Twitter, at Degenerates97.5, at Aaron is Blitzed. Make sure you're following Aaron. If you're not following Aaron, you're a bad person. So get on it. Like the guys on Facebook at The Blitz 97.5. You can stream them on the ESPN radio app at ESPN97.5.com. And Of course, all our podcasts, every show is podcasted, and you can get it at podcastarena.com. Now, Richard Justice, MLB.com, was with us a little bit earlier on in the hour. We're talking about the Astros' lack of production at first base. And Josh Reddick now picking up some reps, you know, in practice as they try to see whether or not Reddick can play first base. You know, Reddick playing first base, is he an upgrade over Yuli, over Tyler White? Yeah, right now he is. But not by as much as you think. You know, Reddick hasn't had as many at-bats as Yuli. Part of that is you know, he only played one fewer game, but he's gotten a few less at-bats. He's got three more homers. He's got eight less doubles. So even though Reddick's hitting .293, he's another guy that this year is not drawing any walks. So he's walked 18 times, so his OBP is only 40 points higher than his average. For a top player, you're usually looking for a guy whose OBP is somewhere in the 60 to 80 point range above their average. For an elite player, you'd be 100 points over your average. For example, Michael Brantley's OBP is 60 points higher than his average, but he's hitting .321. All right, Carlos Correa's OBP is 65 points up. George Springer's is 80 points up. Bregman is 130 points up. Now, part of that is Breggs is hitting .264, and I think by the time all is said and done, Breggs' average is going to go up 30 points. But Reddick's OPS is .767. That makes him like an okay starter. And plus, we know Reddick splits righties-lefties. Reddick doesn't hit lefties to save his life. Never has. And you know, probably okay to, if Reddick is able to play the position capably, could you live with Reddick playing first against righties and Yuli playing first against lefties? Probably. What does that do to your outfield? Well, that's going to move Springer to right, Brantley in left. Does that mean you're going to go with Marisnik in center when he comes back off the injured list? Does that mean that you're going to rotate some combination of Marisnik, Tony Kemp? And Tony Kemp's got to find the bat. I like Tony Kemp as a player. Tony Kemp has hit at every level of the minors. Sometimes he needed a year, but he's hit at every level of the minors with an OPS of at least 800 every year. But Tony's had some struggles with the plate. He hasn't had a lot of at-bats. He's got 137 at-bats. It's not a lot. And he's got five homers. But he's got to find his stroke at the plate. You know, could we see Marisnik, Kemp, Diaz? I don't think that Fisher or Straw looked at guys who are going to be on the roster once the other guys start to get healthy. If Tony Kemp starts to hit, do we start seeing more Tony Kemp in left field? Because if there's a hole in the lineup and you move guys around, well, there's still a hole. You've just moved it from one spot to the other. And if, as we heard Richard say, right now, at least for this year, the Astros consider Alvarez as a DH. Now listen, as long as his bat's in the lineup, the kid's raking. But if they look at him as a DH at some point, you know, is Kyle Tucker coming up? Kyle Tucker's hit for a lot of power at Round Rock. His average, I don't think, is where they want it to be. But he's hit for power. Yeah, so far this season, Kyle Tucker is got 23 homers, 55 ribs, 16 doubles, He's actually got his average up to 282. It was 263 about 12 days ago. So if Kyle Tucker's, if they think Kyle Tucker's a guy who can come up and play the outfield for them, I know last year Tucker looked overmatched the plate, but what bothered me more than that was Tucker looked lost in the outfield. There were way too many plays defensively last year where Kyle Tucker was playing the outfield like he was being chased by bees. Now, maybe in Minute Maid, maybe Tucker's a better play in right field than left because you've got the Crawford boxes there and then you got the way it juts out and then it drops back. He had some troubles in there. Brantley seems to be comfortable over there for the most part. You know, does Kyle Tucker come up, start playing right field, Georgie in center, Brantley in left, Reddick at first? Because if Tucker's going to hit 280 with power and he's got a good walk rate, his OPS is almost 990. Tucker's hitting. He looks like he's getting hot. So if he can come up and produce, we've seen Alvarez come up and produce. Now that he's a year older, can Tucker come up and produce? That's how you get rid of the hole. Because if Reddick's got to move to first, and we heard Richard say, look, if Altuve's knee is going to bother him all year, they might have to DH him more. That's going to give more at-bats to Aledmys Diaz, who I think is hitting for a better batting average than we all thought. But the power is real. And he's a deadpool hitter. That could really change the dynamic of the Astros lineup. Lengthen it. But more importantly, put a lot more pop in it. Because Tucker certainly has the potential to have a lot more pop than Reddick, who has more pop than Yuli. And then Alvarez, the DH spot, he's got tons of pop. It changes a lot of the dynamic. And then they don't need to go out necessarily and get a bat. Remember, Carlos Correa will be back in a month or so. And it lets them just focus on pitching. You heard Richard talk about, you know, Marcus Stroman as being a guy they like. They like his stats. They like his stuff. They like his velocity. They like his spin rate. Stroman's a really good pitcher. Focus on getting another starter. Focus on getting an arm, maybe two for the pen. I think two might be a luxury. They'll definitely get one. It definitely sets up this team to look a lot different than it has over the last month. And that matters. All right. As we wrap up hour two and get ready for hour three, the Texans still don't have a GM. They still haven't reached a long-term deal with J.D. Clowney. And then there's this sleeping giant of an issue coming up on the horizon. Next.
You know who it is. It's Kareem Jackson, and you listen to ESPN 97.5.